For all those that wondered what happened decades after Easy Rider and decades before Easy Rider, there's Easy Rider, the ride back. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey there, Dan McCoy. I am Stuart Wellington.
Hey there, Stuart Wellington robot. I'm Elliot Kalin.
Hey.
Wait, I can't do a robot impression. Go, Dan.
It goes like this. Beep, boop. Beep, boop.
Yeah,
I'm
then
Stuart
you
Wellington.
Talk like this in a monotone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so wait. Is this like an improv class?
Yeah.
Look, we're just trying
improv
to teach
class
you
to teach you how to be a robot.
You're also going to be a baby robot? Beep boop, I am Stuart Wellington.
Goo goo.
I'm baby bot Stuart Wellington, yeah. I think is what
I'm
saying.
Just trying to teach you to do the one impression anyone of any age knows mm-hmm. how to do.
Which is what?
A robot.
The fuck?
Oh, right.
Beep
Get
boop.
With the program.
Here's how you do a robot. I'm Stuart Wellington, beep boop. Here's how you do an alien. I'm Stuart Wellington, gleep galore. It's easy.
Yeah. For more like this, send in for Elliot's pamphlet.
Easy. Wait, it's called Easy Impressions. Even yeah. you can do.
First, you have to draw a turtle, and then Elliot will teach you how to impress.
And if you don't draw the turtle
people.
Well enough?
Then you have to draw a pirate.
Oh, okay. That's not that bad.
And if you don't draw the pirate well enough, I cannot help you.
No. So this is a movie.
Wow.
I did it again, guys.
We've done this over 150 right. times.
So this is
a podcast.
A podcast.
You're hearing it in your ears. It's called The Flophouse.
The Flophouse.
Where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. And
bad
tonight.
Movie.
Well, I want to say that one thing. If my voice sounds a little off tonight and possibly more annoying, it's because I'm getting over a cold. So
or
don't
maybe
think
it sounds better.
Or it sounds better.
And
maybe
everyone will keep infecting you.
Sexier and very whitish. But if you are hearing me wrong, it's not your headphones. It's my voice.
Yeah, if it's not a normal Elliot sound, just speed it up a little bit. So it's all
yeah,
chipmunk
make it more
sandy.
High-pitched and chipmunky. A little Porky Pig ear. It's not the coffee, it's the bunk.
So
it's a Christmas in July reference.
We watched a movie called...
Did we watch a movie, Dan?
Easy
I'm still not sure. I don't know what we
How
watched.
Minutes,
Easy Rider,
the ride back.
Back?
What? It's called
I
Easy
can't
Rider.
Remember whether it's the ride back or the ride home.
It's Easy Rider, the ride back. This is an unauthorized sequel to Easy Rider, except the guy who made it bought the rights to Easy
yeah.
Rider. So it is technically an authorized sequel by the owner of the rights to Easy Rider.
And
spiritual sequel.
I will say a large part of the credit for us doing this movie comes from Nathan Rabin of The Dissolve tweeting directly at us and suggesting that we do this movie.
And saying, hey, do this movie.
Which
yeah. I double dog dare
which
you.
Which I'm super glad he did because this was awesome.
Yeah.
This was a... Wow.
And if you're,
I
just
wow.
gotta say, if you're a normal fan out there,
or
being
normie,
like, you know, like, oh, they didn't do the movie I suggested. Well, tough. We're a bunch of starfuckers here. If you're a minor internet celebrity.
Why is Dan
or
looking at us?
Or if you're a major internet
I don't know
celebrity.
Why you're so mad,
or
Dan.
A major normal celebrity.
Why are you
we'll
being so
you,
mean to our listeners?
Look, I'm if you saying, write for The Dissolve and you recommend a movie
yeah,
for us, we'll watch it.
We're going to prick up our ears, man. We should have...
I don't know what that means exactly, but I don't like the sound of it.
It's a saying.
It's a saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dick Ears McCoy
My
is,
point is, if there are other semi-famous to famous people out there who want to tweet at us, maybe we'll have a Starfuckers Month.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Barbara is this
Walters,
a contest?
Recommend a movie
yeah,
to
it's
us.
It's a contest.
It's a new contest we're doing if you... wait, what?
So yeah, Peter Scolari wants to write in with a movie
exactly.
for us.
You
we'll
gotta,
watch it.
But you got to verify yourself. You got to take a picture of yourself, Peter Scolari.
With that day's newspaper.
That day's newspaper.
Yeah.
To prove that you're modern Peter
and
Scolari.
And a picture of you.
Not a time frame. Let's see Peter Scolari.
We don't want Maniac Mansion Peter Scolari. We want girls Peter Scolari.
That's right. But the point is, Easy Rider.
Is he on Maniac Mansion? Or am
I
thinking of that?
That's a Nintendo
no,
game.
He was in the direct-to-video Honey, We Shrunk Our Somethings.
I mean, I.
Honey, oh, no. It was, I think it was the Honey, We Shrunk the Kids
Newhart.
TV show.
That was the.
Not from Bosom Buddies?
To me, Newhart was the pinnacle of Scolari. Scolaridom.
Tom Hanks.
Scolari
Mania. Scolariana.
Sweeping the nation.
It was him and his brother Ghost that attacked that. Attack that judge.
Yeah, the Scolari brothers. I gave them the chair. Then they attacked me as a judge. when Lewis, what's his name? What's Rick
Tully?
Lewis Tully was defending the G-Busters.
The G-Busters.
Yeah.
Wow, it took me a long time to realize where Stuart was going with that Scolari
really?
Ghost thing.
You're saying that's not the first thing you think whenever you hear Peter Scolari's name? Because it is for me. The Scolari brothers. I gave him the chair.
So you think he's the skinny Scolari brother, though, right?
Of course, he's not the big fat one. Come on.
You sound a lot more if a cabbie was a judge than the actual judge.
Yeah, I guess so. I remember seeing those puppets at when I took a tour of Industrial Light and Magic, and it was very exciting to me.
Yeah.
I did all this stuff from movie history, and what hit me the most was the Scolari Brothers puppets and the painting of Vigo of Carpathia.
The Scolari
For
Brothers.
For some reason, I didn't realize I loved Ghostbusters 2 so much.
And you were like, no, David, don't get near that painting.
Well, the Scolari Brothers were definitely the best effect in Ghostbusters 2, as far as I'm concerned.
I
the most charming
that.
Effect.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a soft spot for that mink coat that starts attacking its owner.
All right.
I was going to say the bathtub ooze thing.
Yeah. Well, you like that it reaches for a topless Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway,
the one
Easy
movie
Rider.
We watched Easy Rider, The Ride Back, which is, like we're saying, it's been a long time.
So it's hot on the heels of the original.
It's only 40 years after the original movie.
And
it may seem
that we're killing a lot of time, but this movie defies
This movie is about killing time. It is a long time. It's been a long time since we watched, maybe ever, such a low-budget, amateurish movie for the Flophouse. Even like, what was the movie we watched about how patriotism
Delgo.
Was destroying – America was destroying patriotism in the church?
Was it the Last Dance of Courage?
Last Dance of Courage. Even that looked more professional than this.
We might have to go back to the Simon Fisher era and Memory starring Billy Zane to find such a low-budget film.
But this was – let's try to explain
Episode 2.
Memory. Yeah.
So this is for everyone who saw
True Believers.
Everyone who saw Easy Rider, the movie about Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda riding on their motorcycles around dealing drugs, and are eventually at the end they are
getting shot.
At the end they're murdered by two guys in a truck. And anyone who saw the movie was like, "But what happened next?"
Yeah.
After they were murdered,
What happened several years later?
What happened next? And what happened 40 years later? And also. 25 years earlier.
Well, anybody who watched the original Easy Rider and you saw the guy driving around with the Captain America outfit and you're like, man, America used to be great, wasn't it? Well, that's what this movie...
Where did we go wrong?
And what's so weird about this movie is that this movie saw the first movie, which I guess is about the American dream shattered and we need a more hippie-ish view of freedom. This movie is like... allow us to correct that last movie. Actually, the great times in America were the olden days.
Yeah, all that counterculture stuff, no thank you. We need are more veterans.
What we need is more Vietnam vets. But World War II vets. But I think Easy Rider was not
against... And veterinarians.
I don't think the people in Easy Rider were against World War II. But I would assume they were taking an anti-Vietnam stance.
No, they hated the Jews.
Wow.
Whoa. Well, Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda, a real anti-Jew sentiment.
Wow. So it's originally called anti-Semitic Rider.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So anyway, let's explain what's going on.
It's a metaphor.
So the movie opens... With a long VO and a lot of motorcycle footage of the guy who is also the co-writer of the film playing Peter Fonda's character's brother. Was it
Morgan?
Morgan.
Yeah, he's like a Peter Fonda like-a-look.
He is like-a-look.
He's a real like-a-look.
And that he would like it if he looked more like Peter Fonda.
That's why he dyed his hair black.
If you want Peter Fonda to come to your child's birthday, you look up in the Yellow Pages, the like-a-look section.
Let's say your grandma's turning 90 and her eyesight's not that good. She loves Peter Fonda from like Yuli's Gold or some shit.
Sure.
So, and she wants him to come to her party. You hire this guy, and she can't tell that he kind of barely looks like Peter Fonda if you're squinting at him. And if he's wearing Peter Fonda's clothes.
Yeah. Which he is.
So he's right. He has a voiceover about how he's the brother of Peter Fonda's character. He doesn't like what happened to him.
He got shot on a day with clear blue skies, just like 9/11.
Yeah, he mentions that the shot that killed his brother came out of the nowhere in the blue sky, just like 9/11.
I can see that parallel.
And what happened to America?
Yeah.
And he is living in Mexico, I guess, as a drug dealer. And his sister says, "Hey, our father is dying. You need to come," or it's his birthday. No, you know what? He's not dying. It's his birthday. "You need to come see him." And he's like, I don't want to. I got problems with that old man. But meanwhile,
this scene takes place in a shed full of motorcycle equipment.
Motorcycle memorabilia that all has a red iron cross on it. Because their dad started a gang, a motorcycle gang that had used a red iron cross as its symbol. Anyway, they argue this. Okay, here's a rule about this movie: no dialogue scene is allowed to be more than 2.5 minutes long, or if that, 2 minutes long. Yet every motorcycle riding scene is roughly 75 to 85 minutes long.
Yes, but the corollary of that is even though the dialogue scenes are 2 minutes long, each 2 minute long dialogue scene will mention 16 characters that you have not heard of before.
We were talking about how every dialogue scene in this movie is like the Janet Leigh pickup scene in The Manchurian Candidate, where the dialogue makes no sense, and you're like, did I miss a scene? Like, they must be talking in code. Yeah. What is this?
Is there a subtext here that I'm not getting that explains everything?
Every scene is like a Matryoshka doll, like a Russian nesting doll filled with names that I don't know.
Or a Rorschach test. It's like, let's let the audience figure out what's going on.
If we have the key book that is the key to this book cipher.
They should have sent us a coded message that told us what page to start on in our cipher code.
Oh, boy. Then this would be like rules of the game.
Oh, yeah. It'll be the Godfather.
So they go to a Mexican restaurant or something?
It seems to be a Mexican restaurant.
They get bottomless nachos.
They go to like a Mexican restaurant run by a drug baron.
Yep.
And the guy sells his drugs and comes back, and the sister and he get into a fight.
Over some kind of off-brand bottle of Patron, I guess.
Yeah, because he won't go see their dad, and he's mad that the dad always liked his brother Virgil more. Mm-hmm. Virgil being another character who we never see in the present, but appears in a lot of flashbacks.
Yeah,
the sister goes back and argues with the dad, and the main character Morgan tells his nude girlfriend in the. Probably, I would say the best scene in the movie because there's a nude girlfriend in it. Tells her he has
to
go.
She is totally nude balls.
She's totally nude balls. She is totally nakedocious.
Yeah, she totally raises this guy's value. Mm-hmm. Like before, we're like, who's this weird old dude? But now we're like, man, there's got to be something
like,
going on with
this
guy.
Who's this 65-year-old dude? Well, he's got a 23-year-old girl, whatever that shit is.
Walking jerky stick in a sleeveless shirt and Peter Fonda's jacket.
Well, this nude lady seems to like him.
Maybe it's because he has beautiful, long, black, flowing hair.
Yeah.
That is discongruous with the rest of his hair.
with his gnarled tree trunk face.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Everyone in this movie is
Yeah,
older.
Did you think he was leaving for like an Ent mood or something?
My people have to help the forces of light fight Sauron.
And they move slow enough.
Oh!
Anyway, he decides he's going to motorcycle back after all. He's going to take a long trip. But before he goes,
honor of his dead brother, kind of, but also to see
his
dad,
brother who
mostly.
Died 45 years ago. But everyone is still getting over it.
Wait, who's his brother?
Peter Fonda.
Oh shit! From the first movie.
Yeah, exactly.
The beginning of the movie, right?
Get on the bus, Stu.
Sorry,
come on.
Directed by Spike Lee.
Exactly.
To the Million Man March.
The bus that guy serves nachos or out of.
We haven't gotten to the guy who serves poor people out of a bus that doesn't work anymore and gets a big money transfusion from Peter Fonda brother. But anyway,
and then we don't see him again.
From Peter Fonda Beba.
Yeah.
He's like Fonda Beba from Star Wars. Peter Fonda.
He's a babe.
It's so weird that you made – like it's like if they made a King Kong movie about King Kong's brother and dad. Like I know he died at the end of the first movie, but this is about the rest of his family. And I know
Donkey Kong.
I know they made Son of Kong, which is about King Kong's son, sure. Yeah. They could have made a movie about Peter Fonda's son. Instead, it's about his brother and his dad as if we needed to fill in the backstory. Like most of this movie is prequel, which we'll get to. So before he's going to go on this trip, he decides to pick up his best friend.
But beforehand, there's that great bit where he like makes a decision to go on the trip. And he stuffs that fucking tube full of money, just like
into
in the first movie, which has – like they're only doing that because it's a callback to the first movie. It has no – like it's no real point.
It's not like at any point someone tries to rob him. And it's only because the money's in the gas tank he gets away, you know.
Yeah. And I'm glad he gives it to the first poor guy.
Or not that yet. He's still picking up his best friend at the dirt bike track.
I do say I'm glad that we had you on hand, Stuart, because I would not have recognized that as a callback. I've seen the first movie, but I don't like Easy Rider. I don't like the original. Like, I recognize that
you don't like counterculture.
A million times better than
this
movie.
Call me square, but I'm not a fan of these Easy Riders.
Well,
those five pieces aren't so easy to me.
I like Five Easy Pieces, but Easy Rider, I feel like...
Hair, get it cut. That's what I say.
I starred in Hair.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dan, as one of my great moments in my college career was getting to see Dan McCoy star in the musical performance of Hair at Earlham College.
Yeah.
Not all the naked people. Dan was standing up on a platform, gazing up on them.
Only out of the corner of my eyes was I gazing upon them.
Who did you play in Hair?
I played Claude.
Okay, so you did star in Hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I wasn't.
So that's
mine.
A peek behind, I guess, the curtain of my high school, my college life.
No, but what I'm saying is, you probably had to get deep into character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
smoked a lot of pot.
Yeah.
Dropped
so
a lot
how
of
does
acid.
How does that affect your opinion of hippie culture?
The closest I came to getting into character was the stage manager, Allison Kennis. You may remember her.
Yeah, glad we dropped the name.
What is this, a scene from Easy Rider the Way Back?
Yeah. Right now, drop 17 more names.
She and Karen Florentine and I were going to get some shrooms and eat them on a pizza, and then Allison dropped the ball. She never got the mushrooms.
Is that drug sling, dropping the ball?
Can we cut this story out?
I'm just saying.
Back to the movie?
It was supposed to be research for the role.
What, because there's a lot of pizza in Hair? Were you doing it as Ninja Turtles?
Sure. I was a long-haired Ninja Turtle who did not want to be drafted into the fight against Shredder.
Claude Leonardo thinks that it's groovy to go sit in a movie and be a ninja. Anyway.
I was burning my size. Anyway, so go on.
Wow, Dan, now, if Raphael had said that, I'd know he meant the ninja weapon. But since you sigh sadly so often, I thought you were really protesting by burning your main mode of communication. If you could do that, that would be a powerful protest from you.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, it'd be more of like taking control of my own life.
Yeah,
it'd be a powerful, like, from this moment on, I'm sad no more.
I'm not the sighs don't master me. Mm-hmm. I master them.
Sigh guy no more.
So anyway, he decides to pick up his best friend.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Easy Rider, the ride back. Now, here's the thing. We mentioned there are a lot of names. I don't think we've hit hard enough. The fact that every scene, each character mentions a ton of other characters. And this must be what, like, it must feel like when my wife picks up one of my X-Men comics. And they're just mentioning Aurora Monroe and Spiral and Mojo. And she has no idea who these people are.
They sound pretty great, though.
Yeah. Oh, no. They're all great. Yeah. It's like Forge. A Forge is a noun, it's a thing, not a person.
That's his problem. Cable. Everyone treats him like he's a thing and not a person. But he's a person. He's a shaman and a mutant.
Yeah. So but he goes to pick up his best friend, Jeff Fahey, playing the character of Wes Coast, who is a professional dirt biker turned fat bearded guy.
He's Mr. Motocross.
And he is kind of the Dude Lebowski of this movie. If the Dude Lebowski did nothing but ride a motorcycle and talk at such a low level that you can barely hear what he's saying.
And also have flashbacks to having sex with the main character's sister.
On the back of a motorcycle.
Which is the major nude scene delivery system of this film.
And this is a movie that is shot and scored like a Playboy video calendar.
Yep.
It's
all library music sound-alikes of other songs.
And at this... Anyway, it's...
So Jeff Fahey's character is introduced in some motocrossing where the camera cannot keep him in frame.
Oh, no, he's just too fast. And he's the Sancho Panza of this film.
He really is.
To Morgan's Don Quixote. And they go to a bar where they watch some women dancing on a bar. Jeff Fahey gets into a fight and hits a bunch of people in the face with a Jack Daniels bottle so hard that...
Is that like a roadhouse? What was going on there?
It was kind of a honky-tonk roadhouse.
Well,
yeah.
It was one of those strip clubs where most of the women are fully clothed except for one lady.
Yeah. Well, they were all...
They were all fully clothed.
They were all covered up.
And they all had various degrees of boredom in their dancing.
Yeah. One woman was literally just bobbing while patting her hip.
There was like the one topless lady, and then there was a bunch of...
I think the only top she took off was her cowboy hat.
I don't remember any topless ladies, Dan.
Let's check the video.
This is your Castle Freak ding-dong ripoff. Stuart and I both saw women in bikini tops, game. Sure. Bikini tops and short skirts. I didn't see any.
You don't have the radar that I do.
One girl had chaps on. Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah. Do you think chaps and boobs are the same thing? What do you think chapstick is?
And speaking of chaps, some chap gets rude with one of the girls, and Jeff Fahey clubs him with a bottle.
Jeff Fahey defends her honor by killing him with a bottle. Then they've got a ski daddle. They go.
I did think it was pretty funny when he was like, "It didn't break like in the movies."
Yeah, man, that's thick glass.
Yeah.
So then they ride.
Keep all that whiskey inside.
And there's one of about 20 scenes where they just ride their motorcycle in long
joke,
shot.
What? Said it was a good joke. He's right.
That was a fine little chuckle. So then it's time to watch them ride their motorcycles forever. They eventually stop at, I guess, a restaurant. It looks more like
it's a bus.
No, but before, okay, I guess it's after that. I can't remember. It's hard to keep the order of this movie. There's a point where they stop
nothing
at a restaurant.
Follows anything.
No, but I'm loving watching you try to keep the order.
They stop it. It's either a restaurant or it's the shanty town from Prince of Darkness. And a woman is their waitress, and they ask her where they can get some reefer. She says, "Oh, here we call it pot."
Oh, I love it.
And Jeff Fahey's like, "Pot, huh? Heh." As if that's the craziest newfangled thing he's ever heard. Keeping in mind, they've called it pot for, what, 50 years?
And then there's 5 minutes of this, like, young blonde lady driving around on a motorcycle with, like, some shots of the other two of them following her. And it's like a country music television video from 1992.
And I assume the point is just to see her boobs bouncing while she's riding a motorcycle.
Yes.
And
I mean, it's not even that.
She takes them to a place.
She's not even wearing a helmet.
No. Or long pants. If she fell off that bike, her legs would
be
all
torn to pieces.
Yeah.
She would be shredded like lettuce and not in the good way.
No. She'd be like Steve Buscemi in the wood chipper at the end of Fargo.
Yeah.
So they go to a place, she walks out of a building and hands them something, and then they drive off, and then she stares at them wistfully, as if they've had a moment of some kind.
Yeah. The movie moves on, and she stays there.
Yeah, the adventure of them getting some pot.
This is like the this is their version of, I guess it's like, is it in Vanishing Point, where the hero shows up at a place where there's a nude woman riding a motorcycle? She offers sex to him, and he says no, and then he leaves, and that's about it.
I guess, I mean, like, this movie is... Like, you mentioned Don Quixote before. It's kind of like Don Quixote in that it's a picaresque tale.
Go on.
It is.
Where there, it's
a regular
split
Tom
up
Jones.
Into little incidents that don't necessarily, like, all add up together to a bigger narrative.
Yeah.
Until later on it turns into Tristram Shandy for a while, where it flashes way back and leaves the main character.
So the quest to find some reefer is a success.
Yep.
And they continue on their way. There's another scene where they meet a friend of theirs. Used to be West Coast's big biking rival. Now he serves poor people meals out of an old, unworking bus.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Fonda lookalike gives him some money to fix the bus.
So,
and thus, the fable of the broken bus comes to its conclusion.
So the money he hid in his gas tank, within the first, I'm hoping, third of the movie, he just gives it to the guy for his...
Mm-hmm.
And like, the guy's like, "How much is in there?" He's like, "Enough," and then just gives him all the money. It doesn't make any sense at all.
So I guess they're living off the land, I guess, just stealing chickens and pies off ledges. They don't need that cash dollars.
But my favorite of these unconnected incidents is when they just stop on the beach for a while and a, like, slow, shitty version of America the Beautiful plays over shots of
dead
fish carcasses and ruined old buildings. And at the end, the main character goes,
in voiceover,
"We blew it, man. We really got to take better care of the earth." And that's it.
Yep.
Yeah. Message received.
Thanks, movie. Thanks, buddy. It is the least subtle environmental message since, I think, Godzilla versus the Smog Monster. Then there's also the scene where they bed down for the night. They're camping out. And Jeff Fahey makes the point that they could just fly where they're going. They don't, or stay in a hotel. And Peter Fonda lookalike, or Jeff Fahey, I forget which one, talks about how, hey – if it could be 150 years ago when men had more freedom and these bikes were horses, you saying you wouldn't give up all these modern conveniences to go back to that freedom? And he's like, "Yeah, I guess so." I guess that's another one of the points of the movie about how
I don't really
America
understand what they're
now.
Talking about. I think they're too high on reefer.
Yeah. And then they start laughing at a Cheeto that fell on the ground.
But it's approximately here in this movie that the movie splits off into a whole different movie, right? Like, this is about where all of a sudden we go over to
now it's
the
about
main
the
character's
daughter and
dad.
The father.
Yep.
Now it's about the
Wild
sister
Bill.
And the father. His name is Wild Bill, and he is a cantankerous old gentleman with a constantly quivering lower lip.
Yeah.
He always looks like he's either about to cry or he's chewing like
he's working on a little peanut in there. It's like trying to strip that acorn bear with just his rough little fucking kitty cat tongue.
He's got a tiny piece of gum that he wants to make last, so he's just these tiny little chewing motions. And I want to believe that's what he brought to the world.
He's got that everlasting gobstopper.
It's like his mouth is always in one of those old-time workout machines that just shakes you. But anyway, he's mad at his daughter and the world. He hates his son Morgan, the main character. He loves his son Virgil, who we never see in the present. And the reason for this is he is a veteran of the North Africa campaign in World War II, which he flashes back to a lot. And apparently he was riding a motorcycle during a battle and his leg got blown up and his friend healed him.
Yeah, by Rommel's Africa Corps.
Yeah, and that's – and so the history – so that's another thing. This movie had to give it a family origin for why Peter Fonda rides a motorcycle in the first one. It's like, you know, every –
because that's the thing. I didn't really buy it when I saw the first Easy Rider that he's always riding a motorcycle.
Yeah, no.
What's the deal there?
Like, where did he get that from?
Yeah, oh, you're like, I get the Easy, but where did the rider come from?
So many unanswered questions about how he got into motorcycles. It's like it's a George Lucas Star Wars prequel level of explaining shit.
Sure.
Oh, you're wondering how Han got that vest. Well, here's what happened. He was walking through the forest, and a bunch of brambles ripped the sleeves off his jacket.
Yeah. I mean, not to to flash back to the aforementioned Nathan Rabin. I read his review of this, and he talked about how like the movie came off as fan fiction, and that is totally true.
Totally feels like Easy Rider
it's
fan
like,
fiction.
Oh man, there's so many holes that I need to fill in.
Except fan fiction from someone who does not care for the message of the original Easy Rider. It is it's
the guy who loves motorcycles but doesn't like hippies.
Doesn't like hippies, and so there's to make a very long convoluted story short. The dad is mad. He's a mad dad.
I don't know
dad.
If I'll allow it. I think you should do the entire thing.
I can honestly not imagine the order this stuff goes in. The dad is mad at his daughter. He has bad flashback dreams about World War II. Then his friend, who was the medic who healed him, comes by, and it's one of the old men from Nebraska.
Yeah, a character actor's been in a ton of stuff.
Who his name in this is Stonewall Andrew Jackson, which is crazy that it combines two different American Jacksons.
And Tito.
And over dinner one night, it's weird.
And he got the nickname Stonewall completely unrelated.
Yeah, yeah. It's because he was at the Stonewall riots that night. He was the first guy to throw a punch at a cop.
Yeah.
He shows up wearing chaps the first time we see him.
Yeah, that's why they're so close.
Yeah, yeah. They were lovers. back when that love dared not speak its name.
Yeah, there was like a 5-minute scene of him driving up to the house.
Now, so the daughter – this is a movie where everyone's decades-long family problems are solved with one conversation each. So the daughter yells at the dad, hey, stop pushing me away. Suddenly everything's fine. Over dinner, he explains to her and his friend Stonewall his entire life history, which you'd think they'd know by this point, how he was in World War II. Then he came back. He had a farm. He had a baby. The kids grew up. He taught them racism was bad by talking about Jackie Robinson. And here, perseverance is good, because that was when America was good, when kids listened to their fathers. Not realizing that he's also illustrating that America was super racist at the time during the good old days. But then his sons grew up wrong. One of them went to Vietnam, and the other one and it became a celebrated sniper. The
and
other one
totally forgot that I called the postpartum depression suicide.
Oh yeah, the mother also killed herself due to postpartum depression after the daughter was born.
When the bad kid explained that his mom was sick with something after his sister was born. The whole time with a cigarette dangling from his mouth in the fakest cigarette smoking scene
It's also a scene where he is sketching and coloring in drawings of his American flag bike that he's going to ride in the first Easy Rider. Like he's fucking Spider-Man designing his costume.
But the smoking, like imagine the scene from Ghostbusters where the cigarette is just dangling from Ray's lip the whole time. But imagine that was played seriously as if Ray was still smoking that cigarette. And that's what that little kid's doing, that thing.
Little kid. He's like a teenager.
Whatever.
It's not like an 8-year-old.
I'm an old man now.
Yeah, yeah. They all look the same to you. Mm-hmm. So he's a kid racist.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
casist.
One brother becomes a dirty hippie and doesn't go to Vietnam. The other one does. But what we don't know is it turns out there's – oh, and also the older brother, Virgil –
who did go to Vietnam,
had a crush on the rich girl in town, but because they were a poor farm family, her parents didn't approve. Anyway, but it's revealed.
There's more backstory in this fucking
thing. Keep going, though. I'm shaking my head.
I haven't even gotten to the dirty secret yet where this movie goes from bad to disgusting is when Morgan reveals to his friend West Coast that
this is after we find, like, we see scenes of this this awesome dude being a like a sick sniper.
He's like a super sniper in Vietnam. Well, here's the thing:
like they sniping little Vietnamese kids.
They drop him out of a helicopter in Vietnam. And this is where you know the budget of the movie's not super low because they rented a helicopter.
Boy, do they show it because they hold on that shot of the helicopter for a good half a minute.
And there's a ton of helicopter shots of the bikes going across this.
Probably the same helicopter.
The California scrubland landscape. Yeah. It's the same helicopter they used in the other one, the Huey or something.
So they go to, the part of Vietnam that looks like Big Sur, California.
And then it's got palm trees, so it's Vietnam, right? He gets dropped in on a helicopter. Then you see a unit of American soldiers who are moving through the jungle, and they get caught in a trap.
Super tense.
By this sniper. And then Virgil, who's all camoed up with plants on his head, he finds the sniper and shoots him.
Yeah, like a Tom Berenger.
And then the Americans leave the
Shoots him through his scope, dude.
He shoots him through the scope, just like in Saving Private Ryan or Sniper. And the Americans, I guess their mission was to go there and leave. They've like retrieved the bodies of the people the sniper killed. It shows their helicopters flying away, and that's when Virgil gets up out of the vegetation and goes to walk over to the corpse, which turns out to just be a kid.
He wants to do honor to his fallen foe.
But it's weird because you have to ask, okay, so did the other American troops even know Virgil was there? Did they think that, like, the hand of God struck the sniper dead? And is Virgil just going to walk home after that? Like,
yeah, a lot of crazy things happen.
Thanks for saving us, but guys. You want to ride home? No, it's okay. Cool, we're going to head out. Let's get in the air cab. You can just hang around the Vietnam jungle for as long as you want. But then it turns out he enlisted.
His heart's been broken. He has no reason to go home.
Well, that's the thing. He enlisted because of a dark secret. One night, his rich girlfriend snuck out of her home with him. They rode on a motorcycle down together because everybody loves motorcycles. And by the way, I cut out the scene where the dad, as a young man, takes an amputee World War II veteran on a ride in his motorcycle sidecar in exchange for a handmade flag. Let's just cut out that part entirely. Because America was a much better place back when we didn't have the medicine that allowed us to keep our legs.
And
who made that flag?
I
must have that flag. That flag was sewn so immaculately.
And this
I've
is
never
like,
seen a flag like
you know,
that.
This is Mad Men quality costuming.
Mr. Hunsucker's so
costuming.
Nice, I gave his flag a double stitch anyway. What are you saying?
We're talking Mad Men quality costuming, period costuming.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. At no point does it look like a high school production of Grease. Never. Oh, God.
So
the point is,
we were talking about
the most distasteful scene.
The most distasteful. We're not talking about the amputee.
So we're letting like.
So
we're,
it
at
turns
this point,
out
we assume that the reason he went to Vietnam is because this girl broke his heart,
and because he's a proud, good American who is a patriot, like his dad believes.
Okay. Yeah, at least he knows he's free.
Yeah,
he'll proudly stand up next to you
and defend her still today.
Yeah,
back
exactly.
then. So it turns out Virgil. So Morgan tells West Coast that Virgil had a dark secret. So one night, his rich girlfriend snuck out, and they motorcycled down to an abandoned arboretum. Like, I don't know what it was exactly. Some kind of...
It's part of, like, a day camp.
I guess so. It's like a three-sided house with a fireplace.
Yeah, and, like you see the little campgrounds all over the place.
And they start making out, and the girlfriend starts taking off her shirt, and he goes, no, no, no. And she's like, it's okay. And they start making out, and then who should show up but the bad side of motorcycles? A motorcycle gang.
Wait, hold on.
It's a gang that motorcycles have turned evil.
Unlike the patriotic motorcycle riders we've been used to most of the movie, these are hoodlums who use motorcycles in a bad way.
Yeah. This is a motorcycle gang who looks like some community theater guys who are trying to be like street toughs.
Yeah, it's like your dad decided to make a heavy metal music video.
Yeah,
and so, these are the backup guys.
It's a motorcycle gang from any which way you can.
Yeah, kind
but worse.
Of.
Yeah, and they're led by the fayest motorcycle bandit I've ever seen.
Yeah, the guy who wants to intimidate somebody by like jumping over something or like giggling weirdly.
Yeah, he's like
he's kind of a young William Sadler type.
I can see that.
A little bit.
He's only a couple.
I think you're being charitable on the young part.
He looks like he's about 57 years old. He's only a couple steps away from like Carmen Ghia from The Producers in terms of coded homosexuality. But he decides to hey, this young couple is trespassing, and they punch Virgil and knock him out and make him watch as he rapes his girlfriend. And then as he's passing out, goes, hey, and don't forget about that guy. So yeah. I guess it's implied that he raped Virgil too.
Yeah, both of them.
It is so distasteful.
And look,
it's distasteful. And
it has none of the tact of Irreversible.
And rape scenes are always horrible. I don't want to make light of it. But like, I have to say, this actor is making the most hilarious evil faces.
Yeah,
during this.
Pretty funny.
He's like, he's looking over the guy like, hey, chick, hey, you see what I'm doing? Pretty horrible, huh?
He looks either happy or like super mad.
Yeah,
there's
one moment where there's a look on his face like, I hope he's appreciating this because I sure don't like it.
I'm just doing this for your benefit.
And so Virgil went to Vietnam, and when he comes back, he's a changed man. He's a kind of angel of vengeance, if you will, who wears a hood over his head.
Yeah, he's like one of those the crows.
One of those crows or winter soldiers. And he walks into a biker bar where the gang is, and the gang orders them a Bloody Mary as a show of disrespect, I guess. And this is when there's the best
the
line.
Mark of death, dude.
There's the best. Yeah.
Enjoy your last brunch.
And the 60-year-old pirate bartender delivers it. And this is when the best line.
My
in the
favorite character.
He was by far the best character. This scene at
he's
all honky tonk pirate bartender with a do-rag on his head. Now, he delivers it, and this is the best line in the movie when the Fey motorcycle bandit says, hey, I don't drink this shit. You go sell it to someone else and give me the money.
That's not how it works.
That's Stuart pointed out. That's not how bars work. It's not like you now have ownership of the beer and you're going to outsource to the bartender
sublet
to
this
resell
drink.
Like, I can't handle the acid in that tomato-based drink. You take it back.
Maybe someone got sprayed by a skunk and
I'm
get bored on them.
Could I exchange this for store credit? No, I don't think so.
Don't you have like a token I can use against this?
Just give me two free plays on the jukebox called Square.
Okay, tell you what. You take back the drink and I'll pay $1. Give me like a hot dog. It's not how
sure,
it works.
You don't want,
this is not a party system,
hot dogs?
Sir.
No exchanges, sir. It says it right over there. And another guy walks up. Yeah, I decided I don't want half this shot of whiskey. Can I get like a bucket of popcorn? We don't exchange, sir. No exchanges.
I ate a quarter of this pickled egg. Will you take it back?
Can you?
It isn't as it was advertised. I was expecting more pickle juice.
Can I get a partial refund?
Okay, here's $22. Like, whoa, wait a minute.
How much are you charging for pickled eggs? $35 an egg.
They're totally organic.
Look,
it's farm to table.
It's very
eggs.
Hard to pickle those chickens that lay the pickled eggs. It's a complex process.
It's hard to feed pickles to a chicken, you understand? This bartender asks you, okay, I'll tell you what, barkeep. I'll make you a deal. Instead of giving me the full refund for the pickled egg, can't you give me something in some kind of good? I noticed there's a paper towel dispenser in the bathroom. Can I have a roll of paper towels?
Sure, whatever.
I don't know. We're not getting our Cintas delivery for another 2 weeks.
He tears off 4 paper towels and gives it to him as a tip. Hey, here's some for you two. Have a drink on me.
Sir, I don't need those paper towels. I'm already wearing a do-rag on my head.
Don't dry yourself all in one place.
Well, not my hands? I don't understand. Yeah, your mouth, too. I don't know.
Well, if only he had those paper towels, because he goes into the bathroom
to
use the facilities.
And he is incredible. He goes into the bathroom, and not only does he not wash his hands, doesn't even finish peeing, because Virgil garrots him to death.
But then he starts peeing blood. Does that happen when your throat gets cut?
I thought at first he cut his wiener off. Yeah. Yeah. I thought this was a regular Castle Freak situation.
Or maybe he stabbed him in the kidneys.
I think he just garroted him, and you were seeing arterial spray.
But it ramped off of his wiener?
I don't know, man.
It happens sometimes.
It flowed down his body and went off like a waterfall. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like when you're in the shower and the water goes down and it looks like you're peeing because it's just like cascading off of the penis because it juts out.
I don't want to hear anymore about this.
You're peeing too, though, right?
No, but, well, sure. If you gotta pee.
Of course you are. Come on, who's gonna stop you? Mr. Bubble?
Mr. Clean, maybe, but not
yeah,
Mr.
Well,
Bubble.
He'll say, wait, can I have some of that? He's that guy's in all sorts of things. Anyway.
So our patriotic hero son is a dark angel
of
vengeance.
He is a dark angel of vengeance who has vigilante killed the man who raped
his
girlfriend.
Virgilante.
He's the Virgilante, that's right. We can't, officers, we got to find the identity of this Virgil Anti guy. Well, we checked the guy's name Virgil? I don't think so. We interrogated that Roman poet, and he didn't seem to know anything.
Yeah, the Bloody Mary bandit, the Bloody Mary killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloody Marty.
We found all the suppliers of tomato juice.
Now imagine somebody went into the bathroom, found the biker guy's body, and then brought it to the bartender, was like, so can I get like half a bottle of Dewars for this?
Is this worth anything?
Maybe take his clothes? I don't know.
You could probably sell him to like a medical supply kind. This is not.
That's why you can't allow any kind of refunds.
It's not the body snatchers era.
Yeah, can't you send it to a medical school?
No.
Boil off the skin and they can, I don't know, look at his bones or something.
Do it. Sorry. That's what they do. Make a stew out of him? I don't know.
Yeah, send it to the bodies exhibit.
Full set of teeth? That's got to be worth something. Tell you what, give me a six-pack of Bud.
I'll give you a six-pack of Bud for you to leave me alone.
And you'll take the body, right? No, I don't want it. No deal.
Yeah. Well, we have to assume that's what happened because we don't see anything that happens afterwards. We don't see how he disposes of the body.
He doesn't. He just leaves it there. I just imagine.
It's the janitor's problem.
I want to see this guy, the Pawn Stars type show about this bartender. A guy brings in like, hey, I've got three hats. What can I get for this? Well, these hats are in pretty good condition. I'd say they're worth about like a half a bottle of Coors. Okay, sure, you got it. And then the graphics come
Coors
up on screen.
Wait, Coors Original or Coors Light?
Coors Light.
Okay.
And the graphics come up on screen. Hats, three. Price, cha-ching, half a Coors Light.
I'll give you a lime slice and a cherry. All right.
Okay, I found this antique tin toy. This is pretty good shape. This is pretty good shape. I'll tell you what. Here's a bottle of Jack Daniels. Hey, great. Yeah.
Anyway.
So it turns out Virgil had a dark secret.
That's the whole backstory.
But that's it. That's the last we hear of this character.
That's the last we hear of Virgil until the end when, okay, so finally, Morgan makes it to the Cave Creek Ranch?
That's where they're hanging out.
The main bro, the Peter Fonda lookalike.
Okay.
To the Cave Creek Ranch, which is there's the scene where the sister remembers when
Shane
is that her name
Shane
when she remembers when her son enlisted to go to Iraq
who looked eerily like Jeff Fahey, might I add,
and her husband shows up and is like, you're not going over there to get killed. No, you're not going. And she's like, my dad served and my brother served proudly, bravely. If he wants to make that choice, it's his choice. And the dad is like, just go to Iraq already. End of scene. Immediate cut. It's like they could not bother to spend any more time on it. Let's not let that moment sit. When the guy throws up his hands and literally says, just go to Iraq then.
Yeah, we got another 5 minutes worth of motorcycle footage we need to immediately cut to.
So the son finally shows up. He and his dad, who have hated each other for decades, talk for about 75 seconds, a minute and a half. Everything's patched up.
It was tough for us to pay attention. We were laughing too hard.
We literally could not hear what they were saying because partly the dialogue is recorded very low, but mainly because we were laughing so hard at the constant lip vibrating of the old man. Like, he really amped up the old man face in this scene.
Mm-hmm. It's almost offensive levels of old man face.
It's like you had just imagined he wasn't even listening to his son because he was trying to get this popcorn kernel out of his teeth.
Yeah. The director's like, okay, imagine you're Hagrid and Harry Potter just saved your job.
The
actor Newell Alexander, everybody.
Yeah. Okay, your lip
Jiggly
is...
Same, lip in the
same
West.
Year.
And he was in a lot of stuff.
And in the same year, he was in August Osage County.
There are a bunch of actors in this who are not big name actors, but are in a lot of professional movies.
Maybe you learned that trick from Meryl Streep.
Maybe, yeah. Like in Silkwood when Meryl Streep is just... That's her face in Sophie's Choice, I think, when she makes the choice. But it's like the director was like, okay, in this scene your lip is so cold. It can't stop shivering. So I'm cold. No. Just the lip. I don't want to see any body shivers. Just lip shivers. Yeah. And then they rub ice on his lip, like putting peanut butter on a horse's teeth to make it look like it's talking.
Yeah.
Anyway, they've patched everything up, and next comes, we were just laughing through this, the most beautiful part of the movie, which is... So,
and it's hard to explain. It's hard to, like, explain to the listener
at home
why it's so funny.
Stuart put it best when he said that they had become unstuck in time. The dad is going to... So the son is going to take the dad back on his motorcycle on the ride back home, And then suddenly it cuts to scenes that must have happened before this. He's lying in bed having a nightmare.
Yeah.
His daughter is shaving him while he laughs.
There's just a shot of him flipping through an old photo album.
And it's literally like shards of time have come loose.
It's like a montage for the
Superboy Prime punched the multiverse. Yeah. And now we're experiencing things in non-linear order.
It's the series finale of a 10-season running show, and we're seeing scenes from
it is the last episode of any season of The Wire.
Yeah,
it's the end of Akira, where Tetsuo and Kaneda are going through time.
They're reliving their memories,
but they're also the most maudlin scenes, like you say. It's like
or maudlin or just.
Or
nothing
mundane.
It might have been a shot. There's a shot of him sitting in a chair.
There's this great shot of him getting shaved by his daughter. Yeah, and he's just yucking it up.
He's just laughing, which looks like
that's what he's using his lips for, laughing, not quivering.
It's one of those things also where you're like, is that a scene I missed? Is that a deleted scene? Is that something that's just
an Easter egg?
Yeah, it's just so strange to suddenly have this non-chronological reminder of this guy's past couple days.
But it's hard to impart the sheer level of delight.
Is, especially coming after his masterclass in lip quivering. and they're riding back and Morgan's VO comes back and goes, well, Virgil will be showing up soon, and so will West Coast. And West Coast says he's got a big surprise for the birthday party. And I still hate surprises, because earlier in the movie he said, I hate surprises. That's it. The end. So, we didn't even get to see the birthday party. We never got to meet Virgil. Why the character exists is you're at a total loss.
Well, do you think he got, after murdering that one motorcyclist, he is he got that out of his system and now he's straight and narrow?
No, I think he's an Avenger of the night now.
Well, by day.
Yeah, he's a Virgilante.
By day, he's a certified public accountant. By night, he's the Virgilante who has a camo hood and just goes into bathrooms and kills whoever's at the urinal at that moment, assuming that they're a rapist biker.
Leaving Bloody Marys as a calling card.
Yeah. Hard part is mixing the Bloody Mary in the bathroom before anyone comes in and sees him with the body.
Sure, exactly. He's got to carry his whole kit.
Yeah. All the tomato juice.
measuring cups.
Yeah, he's got a whole bag of celery with him. But,
he's got a utility belt with just that stuff in it. Yeah.
Think of all the garnish he could include.
Why are you walking around with Worcestershire sauce?
Don't mind. Don't think about it. Don't worry.
Are you putting bacon in that bloody Mary?
Harvey Dent, can we trust him?
Is that an oyster on top of it? That's the way I make it.
I call it a Chesapeake Bloody Mary. It just seems so rich.
It's like a whole meal.
I also do one with an egg in it. I call it the Good Morning Mary.
All right.
Wait, what?
Of course, there's my Big Easy Mary. Right. That has chunks of alligator sausage.
Mm-hmm. And andouille in there.
It's a play. It's a play on an andouille and po' boy meal, but in a Bloody Mary.
It's got a whole beignet on the side.
Of course, I'm also working on a disassembled Bloody Mary.
Sure.
That's, of course, glass of tomato juice, glass of everything else, stick of celery.
I thought you were going to say, it's just a half of tomato that I've hollowed out and I pour vodka into it.
Terrible. Wait, is it the 5th of May? How about a Bloody Maria?
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So he's basically a vigilante and extreme radical mixologist. Yeah.
All right, he sounds pretty radical.
We've gone way over time. Quickly, is this a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie you kind of like? I'll go first for once. I thought this was a good bad movie. We rarely see a movie that's truly bad when we do the Flophouse, because we usually stick to bigger films.
I don't know that that's true. We rarely see one that's so incredibly amateurish and incompetent.
Yeah, and the thing is, there's a certain magic to a truly incompetent movie because you don't know where it's going.
You don't know where it's going, and you have no idea why any of the choices that were made are being made.
A mediocre movie you can always predict. A really bad movie, you're like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah.
Why are we watching Jeff Fahey riding a motorcycle through the same identical landscape for 10 minutes?
I used to watch a lot of really bad horror, straight to VHS horror movies, and you don't really, and that's what this movie feels like, and you don't really get those as much anymore. A lot of the super cheap movies are all the found footage type stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't really get that anymore. And so it was great to kind of
I tell you this. If you
fall back in love with a shitty movie again.
If you want to see a bad sequel prequel to an old movie that resembles a softcore porno with almost no sex scenes in it, then yes, watch this one, Easy Rider, The Ride Back. But I also give it a good bad movie.
All right.
It's unanimous.
The coveted good bad. It's been a long time since we've given something good bad.
Very long time.
Usually you have to bully me into saying that Food Fight is good bad.
Before we get on to our letters, a quick word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, which is the all-in-one platform, making it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and a 10% off offer, visit...
A 10%?
A 10% off.
Oh, 10.
Offer, visit www.squarespace.com/flophouse and enter the offer code flophouse at checkout. And look, guys, it's the modern world.
Everybody. Well, I thought we were living in medieval times.
Just arrived here in your time machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But everyone's got a website. Everyone's got a website.
Everybody.
You got a business website. You
have
a personal website.
If you are in business and you don't have a website, what's
your
problem?
You are a fool.
You are a fool. Maybe, and the fool killer should come get you.
Maybe you got a Flophouse fan site. I hope you do. Why don't you have one?
Build one. Know where you can get the web stuff?
With Squarespace. Because it's simple and easy. You got a beautiful beautiful design templates to choose from. You got drag and drop content.
I thought you said dragon, and I was really excited.
A little dragon comes and helps you with web design.
Uh-huh. But you don't have a dragon, but you do have 24/7 support through live chat and email. And plans start at $8 a month, including a
reasonable
free domain name if you sign up for a year.
But the domain name is butts.com.
No, you got it.
I think that's taken. But flophousebutts.com is not taken.
Okay, well, that's going to be the first fan site, flophousebutts.com.
And here's the thing. We know that you're reading websites on your phone. We're mostly spending our time looking at our phone when we're watching these movies.
You are.
I'm looking at my phone right now.
So you got your responsive design that changes for mobile content.
Because people are looking at things at different platforms these days.
Yeah. So just remember, when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, use the offer code FLOPHOUSE to get 10% off your first purchase and so show your support for us here at the Flophouse. So enjoy Squarespace at www.squarespace.com/flophouse. But now...
Sounds like a real deal and steal.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to letters from listeners.
Letters from listeners?
Letters from who?
Listeners.
Letters from listeners?
Listeners. Letters from listeners? Who's been listening to us? Who's been listening to things we do? Who's listening to my phone calls? Who's listening to what I say in the shower? Someone put a chip in my brain, and they're listening to the things that I say and I do. Let's get to the bottom of it. It's a conspiracy. Dan, did you do it? Are you working with the government to listen in on me and send me letters from the listeners who listen in?
I feel like that was like the whole plot of like a season's worth of television in one song.
Yeah, it's a show called Letters, the Show.
So this first letter is titled The Flip House, and it goes...
You got the title wrong, buddy.
Dear Floptrons, there's an elephant in the room of the Flophouse where the podcast is made that...
You're right. There is an elephant in the room. Get out of here.
Oh, man. It's like an episode of Who's Line.
Yeah. Aside from cooking three young women alive...
What?
I think it's a reference to Red Riding Hood.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What?
Oh, that elephant that boils people. Yeah.
It's sitting there being an elephant in the room. Do I need to spell it out? The elephant is... It's the golden age of television. People are always talking nowadays about how TV is where all the good storytelling is happening and that movies are lame. Would love to hear your takes on that, as well as some of your desert island favorite shows. Mine are The Sopranos and Battlestar Galactica. On the flip side, how about the flops? The big swings and misses, like John from Cincinnati, The Newsroom, a.k.a. The Snooze Room.
Boom.
Good one.
Nice Mad Magazine.
Roasted.
And Dustin Hoffman's Weird Horse Racing Show. Wow, two David Milch films. And finally is
well, TV shows, not films.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, maybe, maybe you should reread the beginning of the letter where yes. he made clear the difference between television and
Thank
film.
Thank you. And finally, is Studio 60 the Tango and Cash of television? Yours in Floptivity, yes. Peter, last name withheld.
Now, Peter, I
Peter
would say...
Scolari.
Peter Scolari, you finally wrote in. You answered my letters about your letters.
I'm sorry about your brother. I know he's a ghost now.
But, wait, so those ghosts. Were both... So Peter Scolari was the brother of the Scolari brothers.
So they're the Scolari triplets?
So one of them became a Hollywood actor and the other two became criminals who were sent to the chair.
Yeah.
All right. And then later haunted a courtroom. Mm-hmm. So here's... Let me tell you this, Peter. I have issue with the people who say that TV rules while movies drools. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of great storytelling going on in movies. You just have to either look for it or go to more than fucking Transformers movies. You know, there's the idea that...
Should I be writing this down, Teach?
Yeah. No. But I would say that I think it's overblown. Like, there's a lot of great television drama right now, but I think it's overblown the idea that movies are totally in the tank. And it bugs me partly because there's some stories that are better served in a 2 to 2.5 hour form than over a season. People keep saying – and this bugs me as a writer because I have stories that I'd like to tell someday that do not lend themselves to a multi-season television series. They would be a movie and they would be made for a movie. So the idea that if you're a real writer or if you're really interested in good storytelling, television is now where it's at and movies are over, I find – in a way, almost offensive, you know?
And it's also interesting that, like, a lot of movies – sorry, I'm doing it again. A lot of TV shows that get green lit these days are shows that seem like they would definitely be better served.
Are you talking about movies or shows?
Being, like, at least a miniseries.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of series now feel like they're stretched
out. It's like
they're
so premise-based that it's like – there seems like a natural endpoint to this idea where they just have to keep, like, winding out new things.
So. That being said – there are a lot of great shows out there, and in terms of Desert Island shows, I'd say, for me, Mad Men, because I just love spending time with those characters and really existing with them, and I've loved watching them change over the course of the number of years, but also...
And it's like at a point where you could just kind of pair those characters up, and it's just exciting to see them together. You don't necessarily need plot to push it forward.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I like seeing them just interacting, you know? But, if I was on a desert island, I'd probably want comedy shows to help distract me from how terrible my life
like
is.
So like Scrubs or something, right?
Mm-hmm. So
like Scrubsy Jones.
So you'd either have to go with, what, Simpsons?
Yeah.
Or my all-time favorite television show of all time, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, the first eight seasons of The Simpsons are tremendous.
I'll take all of them if I'm on a desert island. Look, I'll take the mediocre episodes when my only other entertainment is praying for a boat to come save me. I may be taking this too literally.
Staring into a coconut.
Well, like, you know what? I could
is
also
this coconut
watch,
ever going to do anything interesting?
I could also
I'll
watch
staring and see.
Also watch Dobie Gillis over and over again, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if that's your fucking criterion, if you're just like, oh, compared to being on a desert island, like I think most television would.
Well, not Lost.
All
That's
right.
just going to remind you of your troubles.
Yep.
I'm a great big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. I'll say that.
The movie or the show? Are you talking
show.
About movies again?
We're talking about
fucking
television
show,
shows.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And what about
because I like they're very likable characters, and to me, like, that mastered the serialized storytelling in that it was I feel like the best show I've seen at continuing a story, but making each season an individual story arc.
Okay.
Which I feel like more serialized stories should take that model rather than trying to spin out the same story over multiple seasons, which always fails.
Well, and especially I'm tired of mystery stories.
Yeah.
Where you're supposed to keep watching to find out what the characters are doing.
And you're like, I don't fucking care after a certain point.
Which is one of the great things about Mad Men, because it started with the mystery of Dick Whitman. And at a certain point, they solved that, and then the show just kept going and got
and more almost forgot the fact that that was happening.
Yeah. What about you, Stu?
I like a lot of stuff, but I usually try and recommend a couple of British shows like Spaced or The League of Gentlemen, because that kind of walks that like horror and funny line that I like. And as far as shows that are flops, I don't know if I'd say it was a flop, but a Dan McCoy recommendation. A one-season show, I really like Terriers.
Yeah, that's a really good show. And that show, if you are tired of shows that spin out longer than they should, Like, the great thing about that show is, you know, it was canceled after one season, but it told one totally satisfying story within the confines of one season.
Yeah, like, get on that Terriers train.
I will eventually. Yeah, because I got a lot of time to watch TV.
I mean, in terms of flops, though, like, I feel like the problem with, like, a flop TV show is you don't want to spend that much
time. It's a lot of time.
You're going to commit yourself
to,
like,
hate watching
something.
A flop movie is, like,
something.
2 hours, and a flop TV show is, like, 8 to 13.
Yeah, I
like,
think you've already mentioned
the best version. When will Hemlock Grove ever end?
Like,
Studio 60 is the best. That's, yeah. That's one I could watch to make fun of many times.
Mm-hmm. And I always enjoyed, like on a personal note, at the show when
at our where we work, you mean?
Yeah, when
okay,
when so Rory, our former EP, would make jokes about how they would have the characters like people standing outside waiting for signatures for the head writer from that show.
Behind the curtain.
What's great about Studio 60 is it takes place in a universe where a late night sketch comedy show is the biggest show on television. The writers are famous, and their enemies are Christian conservatives who hate them.
Yeah, who can't allow the sketch called Crazy Christians to get on the air, because that will totally unravel the fabric of our Judeo-Christian society.
Studio 60 is how old now? Like 10 years?
I don't know.
It started the same year 30 Rock did, so it's like 8-9 years old. Mm-hmm. And we still talk about it at the show, and we still do the thing where we'll take somebody's script and just glance at the front page, glance at the second page, and go, this is good stuff. Like, this is funny. Because that's what they did on Studio 60 all the time. They even never read the scripts. They just glanced at them and were like, this is funny stuff.
Yeah.
Really? Because you don't know how the sketch develops over the course of the 4 or 5 pages.
So this next letter is titled, Can Somebody Tell That House Cat to Stop Partying? Dear,
so this is the pilot from
dear
the plane.
Dear Flophouse, I've been going through a rough personal time recently. Believe me when I say that you gentlemen are entirely to blame for this. Let me explain.
And now I'm tracking you down to kill each other.
I regularly host celebrating
in
dinner parties.
Bloody Mary based murders.
Dinner parties attended only by the creme de la creme. The last of these gatherings was fantastically ruined when your wretched feline mascot crashed it. By which he means he ramped his skateboard through a closed window, showering my guests with glass fragments. Before I could pick my monocle off the floor, this so-called house cat was gobbling greedy pawfuls of my caviar, dancing provocatively with the mayor's wife, and brazenly opining that the wealthy class pays less than its fair share in federal income taxes.
Sounds like the house cat. Total occupier.
He then sprayed my Chanel sofa and backflipped to the infinity pool. This rampant rule-breaking raged on until the police dogs arrived. At that point, he deftly withdrew his sandpapery tongue from my daughter-in-law's mouth, howled lustily, and bailed over the fence. The house cat's complete disregard for basic decency has resulted in my ostracism and utter humiliation. I'll make this simple, Flophouse. Control your party, animal, or I'm going to revoke your charter. All joke-em-ups aside, you guys are great. Dan the man, Stuart the manly, and of course, fan favorite, the one with the nasally voice who works at The Daily Show, your friend and mine, Hallie Hagelin.
Oh, come on.
Roasted.
Toasted.
Of course, I can't close without giving a shout-out to the man whose endless stream of hilarious, pedantic rambling really keeps the show glued together. Yes, keep writing in, David Kalin.
Oh, God, he got me twice.
Sagan, middle name withheld, last name withheld.
Oof.
So does that mean we're still on double secret probation or triple secret probation?
I think we're on quadruple secret probation.
Oh, no kidding.
Point. I don't know why they keep it a secret at this point.
Yeah.
Might just tell everyone we're on probation.
We should be on, like, wanted posters.
Call the newspapers.
I kind of want more people to write in with tales of the house cat. Now the house cat has affected their life.
Yeah.
I'll allow it.
Okay. As the keeper of the house cat.
Mm-hmm.
It is my burden.
This next letter is titled Late Night Sex Noirs.
Sex Noirs?
Sex Noirs. Dear Dan, Stu, and Elliot Charles Kalin.
Oh, full name. Thank you for some reason.
But mostly Dan.
Discussions of bikini movies are fine and all, but there's more to early 90s Cinemax than car washes and Willie Tallsalt.
Not as far as I'm concerned.
Have we forgotten the majesty of Shannon Worry? Have we lost our collective minds? Why no references to Animal Instincts 2? Mirror Images 2, and other dark psychological tales of big brush to danger. Asking for a friend. Purvisoid last name withheld.
For a friend. Or let's not forget Private Obsession, the movie where Shannon Worry is kidnapped.
Yeah.
It's really gross.
I like, my favorite
Lake
was
Consequence.
Lake Consequence. That's Zalman King, dude.
Where the
Billy Zane, a young Billy Zane.
What was the consequence of that lake?
I think sex, this woman had sex with some like carny or something.
I mean, I don't know if that's a consequence. That sounds more like a reward.
Now,
lake here, reward.
Shannon Wherry has a special place in the feeding food chain because she was the poor man's Shannon Tweed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from Sexual Response.
Yes,
and that's my favorite one of those.
And I just think it's funny that they're like,
she has a call-in show called Sexual Response.
We need another big boobed woman who's named Shannon to do these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they're expecting people to pick up the fucking VHS cassette, start reading the names, and stop after Shannon. Be like,
oh, Shannon's in this. I'll take it. And Shannon Worry's other trademark was that she always dressed really classy. I feel like she did it. She did a lot of like wearing hats with black veils and like gloves and skirt suits. You know, she always looked like she was getting dressed for sexy ladies' tea at a social club.
Sorry, that terrible pun led me to want to make a pun about a Joan Severance package, but I couldn't come up with it.
I think that's fine. We'll fill in the rest.
Yeah. Your time here serving as Black Scorpion has been great, Joan.
I think you'll find this is more than adequate to take care of you for the next couple months. I think. What are we going to say? Like, does he want us to cover every softcore movie?
I think
it's impossible.
What I wanted to say about it, I think that we've covered this to some degree in the past, where I know that you and I, Elliot, at least, I don't know about Stuart, are on the same page where, like, I'm not so much a fan of the erotic thriller because they always seem to be like someone's out there killing strippers, and I'm like, well, I don't want strippers to be killed.
They should be rewarded.
There are those movies where each stripper, you have a strip scene and a sex scene, and then they get killed. And it's like, yeah, well, why can't they just strip and have sex and then go about their day?
Yeah, why can't they have fun having sex? I don't understand.
Yeah,
what the,
we prefer the more lighthearted.
I don't know why it's punitive. I mean, like,
if I'm gonna see girls' boobs, I want the girls to be having fun.
Yeah, well, and like those bikini movies, like say the bikini accidentally falls off, like they seem to be pretty okay with it. Like even in those like situations, it's just like, I'm gonna go with this. I'm having a delightful time. All of a sudden,
you're getting a little too specific. Like, right. You prefer if the hand of God removed the top.
Yeah, like at the end of Screwballs.
I'm just saying.
Like, but were they praying to some kind of?
What I'm trying to say,
it's the end of the stand. Except
they
instead
prayed
of
to fucking Aeolus or something, he provided the wind to rip the top.
The wind god did it.
What I'm trying to get across here is like some could argue that there's like a sexism there too, where it's just like, oh, like there's like this like.
Of course,
oh,
there's a sexism. There.
obviously,
just treating women as objects.
Yeah, anybody could argue that.
Obviously, there's a sexism there, but like the idea isn't just like, oh, it's horrible that this is happening. It's like.
You're
the
trying
women,
not to
the
scare
women,
them.
The women seem to be in those movies delighted participants in what's going on.
Movies where women are used as sex objects but then not victimized or destroyed as penance for having done it.
Exactly.
Know? It's kind of like, yeah, it's you'd rather see a movie where the women are, if anything, rewarded. We're just like,
yeah, you want
enjoying
them to be
it.
Into like what's happening.
Rather than like, okay, she took off her clothes. I liked it, but that means she's dirty. So strangle her in the dark,
like,
please.
Yeah. Like in,
please,
like in
Tony Perkins, come out and stab her.
Well, there's Night of the
Demon. Tony Perkins, the Anthony Perkins?
Well, I'm talking about Psycho.
Because Psycho was not, there was no nudity in that.
No, but the point was,
were you watching
like,
Zalman King's Red Shoe Psychos?
He was punishing a woman who was...
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was thinking you could go more with a movie like Lap Dance or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say in Night of the Demons 2, the one I just want to get this point across.
Yes.
Yeah. That, it's very important. It's a very important point about Night of the Demons 2.
Night of the Demons 2, the one female character who gets naked and has sex is the heroine of the movie, and she survives the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't get punished at all. She punishes the demons.
Yeah.
Although she has to go through the whole experience about fighting and killing demons, so that's terrible.
All right. Well,
it's a real punch for feminism, Night of the Demons 2.
Yeah. But the last letter of the evening is titled Help, and it goes like this. It says, Dear...
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Last name withheld.
Yeah.
Ringo, last name withheld.
Dear Crop House, my corn isn't growing, and I will surely starve come winter. What course of action might you recommend I take? Regards, Jeremad, last name withheld. So
I think you might have written into the wrong podcast.
I don't like Miracle Grow, maybe? I don't
I don't know. I mean, maybe if you can
try rotating your
if
crops.
You can get a boy
sure,
with,
yep.
If you can get
try
a,
step farming.
If you can get a boy with leaves on his ankles, maybe that'll help in some way.
Then we can make a pin out of leaves.
Yeah. Maybe get Pumpkinhead or the Children of the Corn involved. I don't know.
Don't get the Children of the Corn involved. You think that that's going to be helpful, but it is not.
What about the band Corn?
Sure.
What is it, the 90s?
All right. But now it's time for the final segment.
Letters!
No, we just did. We literally just finished that segment.
Stuart sounded so happy. Let's just please him, okay? Let's do letters again.
Let's do some more letters.
Letters are coming in from all over the globe.
I changed my mind.
You know what? That song wasn't so great. Okay. A little pitchy, dog.
All right. Well, so this is the final segment where we recommend movies that we actually enjoyed in a non-good, bad way, unlike Easy Rider, The Ride Back. So, Stu, you've got your notebook open. You're raring to go.
I'm prepared because this is also important to me.
Okay.
And it's not Night of the Demons 2, although it kind of fits the subject that I want to cover. So I figure since we watched a sequel to a movie that probably did not need a sequel, I'm going to recommend a movie that was a sequel to another movie that you didn't expect. And that's Blade 2, directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Okay.
It was Guillermo del Toro's second vampire movie after Kronos. Another movie I think I recommended. And it kind of, you know, it followed Blade, which was a kind of mediocre action movie with some, like, light horror elements.
Yeah.
Though it was, you know, financially successful. And I feel like Blade 2 kind of improved on every single element that was of the first one. It played up the horror element more. The action scenes were more varied. You swapped out a villain where the first one had Stephen Dorff as this kind of like smug, like politicking vampire dude. You had you swapped him out for Luke Goss from the British boy band Bros. who is more like a brooding and brutal bad guy. And it's got a better supporting cast with Ron Perlman. And you really got like – I wouldn't say an early Guillermo del Toro movie, but you still got – you have some really great little touches, the slow build up to the reveal of the genuinely disturbing vampire zombie monster creatures. And I think it's a really effective action horror movie. And for me, it was it kind of came out at a time when I first started collecting DVDs. And I watched
you collected all. Every copy of Blade 2.
I collected every copy in the world.
Yeah, there's shit
and I am sitting on them.
You're waiting for one to appreciate in value.
So, or part of your plan.
They're gonna hatch into a
any of you guys got a DVD player right in.
Yeah. I would like to recommend a movie called The East, which stars and was written by Britt Marling, who also wrote movies with the same director whose name I can't recall, The Sound of My Voice and Another Earth, both of which I have not seen, but I've heard good things about. No, I appreciate the fact that she is generating kind of her own material for herself, and by all reports, it's all interesting stuff. But The East is, you know, a thriller about a woman who works in private security. She used to be in the FBI, but now she just works in corporate security, who infiltrates a eco-terrorism group called The East, whose members include Ellen Page plays one of the members. That's probably the biggest
name.
Hard
Candy?
Yeah.
That's what she's best known for, yeah.
Ellen
Page of X-Men 2.
It's not.
I thought it was 3. X-Men The Last Stand.
Whatever.
It's not a super great movie. It kind of falls apart at the end. It kind of gets very sort of optimistic and unrealistic at the very end, in a way that is sort of surprising, because the rest of the movie seems devoted to trying to at least simulate a kind of realism, even though the actual developments of the movie aren't necessarily that realistic. But as a stylish character-based thriller, I think it's a solid movie if you enjoy kind of low-key thrillers.
So thrillers about Loki, okay, Thor's brother.
Yeah, so Thor and Thor 2 and the Avengers is what I'm recommending.
So what movie are you recommending?
The East.
The East.
Yeah. Elliot?
I'm going to recommend, I haven't gotten to see too many movies lately, unfortunately, but I'm going to recommend one that I saw recently that I almost feel kind of bad about recommending because it's kind of the stereotypical, like, intellectual movie, I guess, mm-hmm. that I've been filling in holes of movies that I had heard a lot about when I was younger and never saw, and I recently watched My Dinner with Andre, and
I totally thought that was what you were going to say. Yeah, and I actually stereotypical intellectual
and like
movie.
It's to recommend it feels like kind of stupid because it's almost like if you were going to see this movie, you'd have seen it. Yeah. Except I hadn't been. I really enjoyed it. And
maybe there's a bunch of people out there afraid to watch this movie.
Well, it's a lot more enjoyable.
I find like it's gotten so stereotyped as like this is that's like a smart, boring person's movie, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who won't like it. But the things that Andre, Gregory, and Walshawn are talking about are so insane, and they are two men who are at a terribly bleak moment in their lives, sitting in this very fancy restaurant and like talking about these bizarre experiences that they've had and how almost semi-pointless life is in a way that was pretty funny a lot of the time also. I really enjoyed it, and there was no point where – and it's just two guys talking over dinner for the whole movie. But there was no point where I was like, oh, come on, boring. But so I really enjoyed it. But I feel like I'm falling into a trap almost or a stereotype by recommending it. So to balance that out, I'm going to recommend instead of Easy Rider, a sequel that I like better than the original, and that like Stuart did, and that's Evil Dead 2. So do an 80s double feature, My Dinner with Andre, and then Evil Dead 2.
What order should you watch, man?
Oh, end with Evil Dead 2. Come on. But I think you'll find that maybe they have a similar sensibility more than you think.
I don't think you'll find that.
No. But
they're both great.
But I guess what I'm saying is just because you like Evil Dead 2 doesn't mean you might not like My Dinner with Andre, and you should give it a shot.
All right. So My Dinner with Andre 2.
At the very least, it gives you a little snapshot of New York in the early 80s that is always interesting to see, you know.
All right. Well, it's come the time where Stuart needs to rev up his motorcycle. I need to crawl into his sidecar, and Ellie needs to crawl into his other sidecar.
There's two sidecars. It's not really a motorcycle so much as a
car.
It's
like the Fantastic Car.
Yeah.
It balances out the motorcycle. It's like a motorcycle with big training wheels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the form of people.
Yeah. Oh, training wheels are made out of people. They're people.
And we're gonna, Soylent wheels.
And we're going to drive off into the sunset.
I got a question about Soylent Green.
Okay.
What ad wizard thought Soylent, something that sounds like soiled, would be a good thing to put in your food product?
But it sounds like soy.
But it's like, I guess, but it also sounds
when
like...
When you hear people say, like, would you like some soy sauce? You're like, no, thank you. That sounds like soiled sauce.
But Soylent sounds like soiled underpants.
Oh, it sounds like soiled lint.
Yeah.
That you got out of the lint.
And now you're eating it.
That sounds delicious.
When they were
dude.
Like, Soylent Green's made out of people, people were like, oh, thank God. I thought it was made out of soiled lint that turns green from mold. Also, why make it green?
All right. Well, we'll puzzle this out off air. But
ask Slimer.
For the Flophouse, I've
Get
been
out
Dan
your Ouija
McCoy.
Board. Wait, what?
I've been Dan McCoy, you asshole.
I've been Stuart Wellington, you asshole.
And I've been Elliot Kalin, beep boop. That's how you do a fucking robot impression, Stuart.
Call back. Good night.
I watched Big Trouble in Little China again last
night.
Yeah,
exactly.
I have no idea.
Black Blood of the Earth.
It's such a good movie.
I mean, Black Blood of the Earth.
Basically, it boils down to a love story between a man and his truck.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you going to kiss her? Oh, I got to get going.
You know what old Jack Burton says at a time like this?
Who?
Jack Burton. Me.
I like hearing you guys talk about the movie so much more than I like watching the movie.